Welcome along to this week's episode of the Let's Get Running podcast. How is the caramel kid?
What? I'm good. What's Johnny Sean doing? What's he saying?
He's getting ready for his forthcoming holiday. I'm off to Ireland. We're recording a little bit early. We're recording this on Wednesday. Show's out on Monday. I'm off to Ireland. I'm off to Gran Canaria. So I'm just getting ready for that. I'm going for a haircut in a minute. We're doing this sharpish. I need a bit of a beard trim. I need to sort myself out. I'm looking a bit unkempt, so I'm getting ready
What about, are you shaving your legs, your chest hairs, your back? I know you've got a hairy back.
It's a sign of my manliness, Jermaine. I'm keeping all that stuff. I'm keeping all that hair. It's important.
And what trunks are you rocking? Are you rocking Speedos or are you rocking
Well, I'm a dad now, so I've got to be a bit more restrained. So I'm just going for the normal, just your standard swim shorts, really. A pair of green ones.
The Y-front ones?
Not the Y-front, no. I'm not that old and embarrassing yet. Yeah, I'm not far, but I'm mainly going for just the normal shorts. I'm going to be rocking those.
And if you got, I know you're rocking those Jesus sandals with socks as well.
Yeah, I'll be having wearing those. Yeah, fantastic. Yeah. I'll fit right in. We're going to go to the German side of the island. So what have you been up to? You been busy?
Oh boy. So before I left for my snowboarding holiday a month ago, they said, oh, you need to learn a new route. So I learned this new route, but I never drove it. And then when I came back, first day, I've got to do this route.
Yeah. Just to clap, if you're listening for the first time, Jermaine is the number one bus driver in London. You'll know
the number one, yeah?
The number one. Yeah. So carry on, you learn this route.
So I learned this route a month ago. So usually when you learn a route, you usually drive it a couple of days after because it's fresh in your mind.
Yeah.
But they didn't give me any jobs for a month. And then I went on holiday. So it's like, it's way back in the mind, way back in the mind.
Yeah.
And then first day back, I've got this new route, so I'm a bit nervous, but excited at the same time because, it's a bit different.
Yeah, variety is the spice of life.
The routes on diversion, and all they give us is a little piece of paper with names of streets, no map.
Yeah.
So it's like Take Barry Road and all this stuff. And I don't even know the area, which makes it worse.
Yeah.
But they said, don't worry, it'll be signposted.
Yeah.
So first half, I don't do the diversion part, so it's fine. Yeah. Have my lunch. And then it gets dark, so it's hard to see.
Yeah.
And the second half, I'm going along, and I see the road. And I'm thinking, okay, is this my road? And then the sign, the diversion sign, didn't have, because usually the diversion sign is like a little cardboard with your bus route saying, obviously, turn this way.
Yeah.
But it didn't have my number on it. So I was thinking, maybe it's not that one. Yeah. So I kept going,
yeah.
And then before I knew it, I was at the closed road, right?
Yeah.
with a full bus. So I'm ringing the thingy. So I know I messed up. I'm ringing the controller.
Yeah.
And then obviously then I just say, you know what, I better just kick the passengers off. So I went, this bus terminates here, with that little button.
Yeah.
I kid you not, even the grannies were trying to shake my door off the hinges. I was like, what? And they just refused to get off the bus. Everyone refused to get off the bus. I said, it's my first day doing the route. I said, I'm lost. I said, I don't know where I'm going. They said, don't worry. We'll show ya. And one woman wanted to go to Sydenham. So we're in Dalwich. And yeah. one woman wanted to go to Sydenham.
Yeah.
And she's like, yeah, just turn right, turn left. I was thinking, I miss out Forest Hill and all the rest of the stuff. I was like, and then the controller rings me, yeah. And he says, driver, what's going on? So I'm like, shh, people. And then he says, oh, just turn it around and then come back. And yeah. Everyone was cussing. Everyone was like, nah, we ain't turning around. I was like, oh, no.
So you're providing a personal taxi service to the residents of Sydenham on your bus.
And then people getting their phones out, looking Google Maps, and it is so funny. And all the cars were going around the closed road cones,
yeah.
And turning down a side street after the cones, which you're not supposed to do. Mm. And they're like, just follow them cars. And I said, yeah, that's no fine. I don't mind following the cars. But I said, if there's width restriction or a bridge, I'm in big trouble.
Yeah.
They said, no. And then one woman come up to me and says, oh, a bus goes down there. So I was thinking, okay, if a bus goes down there, my bus goes down. I said, is it a single or double? She said, double. Yeah. So I said, fine. So I said, okay, everyone in your seats, but you will stay up here. So I started driving off. That woman goes, sits at the back. I'm like, whoa, where's my navigator? I said, come back up here. Come back. Because she tried to disappear, you know. So I'm going down these really tight streets. And obviously it worked out. And I got back online the route, finally. And everyone was just laughing. And when everyone got off, they were like waving, new driver. I was like, yeah, new driver.
The toast of Sydenham. Jermaine gets everyone to their destination.
Oh, man. It was, you know.
So with all this learning new routes and driving new routes, you haven't done your 10K yet, I guess.
I'm doing it. I leave my Strava on.
Yeah.
And whilst I'm driving. Yeah. And then obviously I can. But that'll probably work out slower because runners usually beat buses.
Yeah, yeah. You'll be known as a Strava wanker. You'll have all these.
Yeah, but you got to remember when you drive,
yeah,
especially a bus, I'll be stuck in traffic. So my time, I'll be doing like 15-minute kilometres.
Yeah, yeah, a couple of 1-minute kilometres and a couple of 15-minute kilometres. Yeah, be nice.
Yeah, I'm going to do that tomorrow.
Yeah,
do my 10K fantastic. Tomorrow.
And me too, I'm doing it over the weekend, but this is coming out Monday. So if you have done it, we said the closing date for the competition, if you don't know about it, we were trying to see you do an Improvers 10K challenge. So we ran 10K about a month back. We're going to try and we followed Wendy Slies, who's a previous interviewer. We followed her advice or her own advice for running fast 10K. Then by the February the 10th, which is the weekend just gone, you're supposed to run another 10K. If you've done that and you want to be in the chance of winning a t-shirt, Let's Get Running t-shirt, you've got to email me, sean@letsgetrunning.co.uk, your two times, and I'll have a look at who's been the biggest improver, and we will announce next week who has won the t-shirt. So good luck everybody with that. We're also announcing a new feature.
Sean's idea.
This is a bit of fun. So we're announcing a new feature, which is Challenge Caramel or Demand the Devil. Who's going to challenge the caramel? Let's take them on. Who's going to challenge caramel? So what you're going to do, Jermaine's doing some pots and pans right now. If you want to challenge us, what you can do is on the show notes today, there will be a phone number, right? You can WhatsApp call. Don't call it, actually. Just WhatsApp record questions for us, and we're going to play those questions live on air and try and answer them. So a bit of fun. You can ask us anything you want, and as an example, I asked my baby daughter to come up with some questions to ask the caramel today. So here we are. These are messages
on the fly.
You know, these are questions.
Didn't tell me this.
These are questions for caramel from my baby daughter. The first is, Jermaine, what is your beauty regime? How do you keep your skin looking so soft?
I use Vaseline.
You Vaseline?
I do Vaseline my whole body. And that's how I keep. That's how you keep baby face soft. Yeah, yeah. Baby face.
Well, they say black don't crack, but would you mainly need to put Vaseline on it? The second question is, as a millionaire following the breaking of the British 1500 meter steeplechase record some years ago, what is the most expensive thing you have ever bought, Jermaine?
A Cartier watch.
Big spender. Here's
Jermaine. it was really funny, that story, because you know when you I was in the airport because obviously you get a discount in the airport.
Yeah.
And I was with my mates and I didn't tell them I was going to buy it. Mm. So, you know, when you look in like these like expensive shops, you just look at the stuff.
Yeah.
And they just think you're looking. And all of a sudden I said, oh, I won't mind trying that on. So I was trying it on. And then I said to them, I'll buy it. And my friends were like, what? I was like, yeah. But I knew I was going to buy it. But they thought, what's going on? Where did you steal the money from?
But it was all from breaking the record, right? You're a millionaire after that.
Yeah, of course.
And the final question from Baby Greta is, Jermaine, I forgot what the question is. I'm just making it up on the spot.
What? You're making it up. This BS, you know.
Which leg is longer, left or right?
What about the one in the middle?
Family show. I'm cutting this out. Anyway, we're moving on. That's it. You can email us in. We'll read the questions out. The stupider the better. We'll answer your questions. Or if you want to ask a proper question about training, we're happy to do that. Just email us in. And on this week's show, this is a personal cathartic show for me. Now, so I am, I've just had a baby. I work from home. I run my own company. I am struggling to deal with running. I'm struggling to deal with the job and all that sort of thing. And I wanted to interview a couple of people who basically just go out there and they get it done. They go out there, they run, they make it a priority, and they achieve despite of obstacles placed, perhaps not obstacles, but of situations they're in and the lack of time that they have. So we're going to talk to Bridget Pickett. She is Trail Bird Mama over in the States. She was...
Trail Bird Mama!
She's a Trail Bird Mama. She is was the cover star of Runner's World. She ran all the way through her pregnancy. She is a mum of two children, and she gets out there and she runs. So we're going to talk to her about her experience with that. We're also going to talk to Alex Collins, who is a diabetes type 1 sufferer. He developed that in the last 5 years, and he has been able to improve his running to such an extent, even with the condition, that he's run a 2:40 marathon, which is a PB before or post diagnosis, which is pretty impressive. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about how they just get out there and get it done. I guess we're not a good example at the moment, Jermaine. We're not getting out there getting it done.
Which is perfect, obviously, to talk about.
Yeah.
the only, like, when motivation is low, yeah. You need, like, the only way I'm forcing myself to go running is obviously... motivation for doing a race.
Yeah, okay.
Because I need to do it. So our target is a race, which obviously in my case is the podcast showdown. So I was thinking, okay, I need to run for the half marathon.
Yeah.
And then obviously the other thing is timing.
Yeah.
People for, you know, like, I can't find time. So I just jog back from work. Because obviously it would take me 40 minutes if I got the tube back from work. But if I run, it's going to take me roughly an hour. So it only adds on 20 minutes.
Yeah.
So... it's sort of like two birds with one stone. I've got to come back anyway, so I'm sort of doing a bit of both.
Yeah, okay.
But maybe the quality is not as good, because obviously you've got to run with a backpack.
Yeah. I'm the same. I need to have like a routine for me. Like if I don't, like I'm good at getting out there. Like there's never a choice for me to get out there. Like some right. people say to get up and, oh, I don't know whether to run today. There's never that in my mind. It's like, when am I running? Doesn't matter what I've got. Yeah,
fair weather.
I'm just gonna do it, and it's. I think that's quite a good routine to get into. But the problem is, I'm struggling for a bit of quality, because I haven't got really. I don't know my target. I'm not in the mood to get as addicted as I was when I did that 220 challenge. But I think that's all right. Like I remember when I ran my best every year, I had a really bad November or December, and my coach at the time, Ben, just said, "Listen, for this month, just get out and just run." And don't worry about it, because if you'll keep ticking over, if you keep just getting out there and just hitting the miles, not worrying about your performance and stuff, you will. It doesn't take that long then to then add that extra little bit of spice on top and to come through and be running fast. So just sticking with it, getting out there and getting it done is really important.
Yeah, the stodge is important.
The stodge. Get out there and get some easy miles done.
And in the summer, then you put the ice in. The sprinkles, the cherries in the summer.
Yeah.
When the weather's nice, the weather's nice.
There's always that temptation to get there and do it. But hey. But we're going to listen to those guys. They're going to tell their story. We're going to go across to them now. And we'll catch you at the end of the show. So on this week's show, we are talking to Bridget Pickett. How are you doing, Bridget?
I'm good. How are you, Sean?
Very, very well. Yeah, and were you just saying you're over in Arizona?
Yes, we're in southern Arizona. My husband's in the Army, so we're at Fort Huachuca right now.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, we're in the desert, but we have a little mountain range here called the Huachuca Mountains. So we kind of have the best of both worlds.
Fantastic. Nice. And you're an ultra runner?
Yeah, I've just got into ultra running about two and a half years ago.
Yeah.
I've ran a handful of 50Ks, and next on my list is to run my first 50-miler.
So you recently came to national attention in the US. the running through pregnancy. How long did you run through your recent pregnancy with your baby boy?
Yeah, so I ran all the way up until my due date. I was 40 weeks, and my son was born 3 days after my last run.
Wow. How far was that run?
It was only a couple of miles, and it was a good amount of walking, too, because at the end I was sore.
Yeah. And how old is your son now?
He is 2 months old.
Oh, okay. And you're saying it's your second child? You have a daughter, too?
Yes. Our daughter, Mila, is 3 years old.
Oh, nice. And did you run through both the pregnancies? Was it something you did for both children?
No, I actually did not run during my pregnancy with my daughter, Mila. I had high blood pressure throughout that pregnancy, yeah. So I was considered high risk, and I was just really nervous about running, so yeah. I didn't even ask my doctor if I could run. I didn't even try it.
Okay. So what made you change then for the second?
I think... First of all, I was not high risk. I did not have high blood pressure.
Yeah.
And I think running became a really big part of my life after my daughter was born. So thinking about giving that up during pregnancy seems like it would be really hard to do. So, yeah, it has become a new part of my normal daily life. So I wanted to continue it.
Yeah. And did you, were you always confident of doing that? Did you research the safety of the sort of running while pregnant?
Yeah, I was confident the entire time. Yeah. Not being high risk, I wasn't nervous about my health or the baby's health. And I read a handful of articles online, and I knew that exercise and running during pregnancy was perfectly healthy for the baby. And I had my midwife's approval.
Yeah.
She was very supportive. And then I have a handful of friends who also ran through their pregnancies, and they did it safely and have had healthy babies. So, yeah, I was confident.
And did you find that any times were you uncomfortable physically when you were running? Did you find that, was there a anything in your head that told you I'm not sure about this at any time?
Yeah, towards the end.
Yeah.
But it was uncomfortable. Probably there were times throughout the entire pregnancy. In the beginning, the most challenging part was how difficult breathing felt. And this was before I even had a baby bump. I wasn't showing at all. And I just became winded so easily. So that was tough. And then, of course, your wife running through pregnancy has probably told you about all of the pee breaks.
Yeah. So
that was very uncomfortable. But yeah. Luckily, I'm a trail runner, so that was a little bit easier for me. I didn't have to search for bathrooms.
Yeah.
At the end, it was uncomfortable because of how big the baby had gotten. So I would be pretty sore after each run, my hips and my lower back and pelvis. But I felt like those discomforts were all well worth the positive effects that running had on my life.
Yeah. And did you use any kind of gadgets? Did you use a belt or anything like that to reduce the pain? What would you recommend?
Yes, I use a belly band. It's called the Gabriella belly band, and I ordered it from Amazon online, and it definitely saved me. I think it helped keep me running longer than I probably would have without it. It helped. It kind of wrapped around my lower back and velcroed underneath the belly and kind of supported my lower back and helped hold my belly up a little bit.
Yeah, stop it bouncing around so much. I think my wife had a similar thing when she was wearing this band. She just called it her bra, her baby bra that she used to put on.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically what it is. It's like a bra for your belly.
Yeah. And what was it then? So you were mentioning that you didn't run as much, or you didn't necessarily run with your first child. When did you take running up seriously then? What was the trigger for you to take ultra running particularly more seriously?
So like I said before, my husband's in the army and we were stationed in Colorado where my daughter was born. So we did a little bit of running there, and then I got pregnant, and then my husband really got into trail running. There's a big trail running community there, and we had access to so many trails nearby. So he was running while I was pregnant, and I just thought, that looks really fun. I want to do that. So after having my daughter, Mila, I got into it, and I started signing up for some shorter races, and I completed these races that I never thought I could do before. So it was a huge boost to my self-confidence, and I was just hooked from there.
Yeah, and how did you manage it with the, because obviously we just had recently had a baby, so it's our first few weeks, so we're just getting into the swing of things, but finding the time to commit to getting out there and hitting the trails is quite difficult. How did you do that?
Yeah, it's really hard. So I'm a stay-at-home mom, and with my daughter, and now with both of my kids, I do a lot of stroller running. So during the week, I'll run in the morning with either one of the kids or both. And then I will run usually just once on the weekend, one long trail run when my husband can watch the kids. But I have to be really flexible. So on the week, I can't always run depending on what the weather is like or how my kids are feeling. So I have to kind of lower my expectations. And I just really appreciate my time on the weekends now.
Yeah.
That I get to myself.
Yeah. And I guess then a training plan's kind of out the window. It's just see what you can manage in a day.
Right. Training is interesting. We're learning as we go right now with my training for this 50 miler. My goal for the race is just to cross the finish line. I don't really care about my time or pace or any of that. So, yeah, I'm just hoping I can get all of my long runs in, and that's what I'm going with right now.
Fantastic. And you're saying, you know, when you're running through your pregnancy, your second child, did you experience any reaction from other people about what you were doing?
Not too much during my pregnancy. I passed a few people on the trail, and some people would say, be careful. Most people would be supportive and would be surprised to see me. And my family and friends and midwife were all very supportive. I've heard a few negative comments now on social media since getting a little bit of attention, or a good amount of attention, from being on the Runner's World cover.
Yeah.
About people thinking that running is harmful to the baby, or how trail running is dangerous because I could have fallen and hurt the baby. But those comments really haven't bothered me, because I know that it's completely safe to run while pregnant, and I'm confident in my ability to run on trail safely.
Yeah.
And if I ever felt like there was a chance that I could slip or fall, like on rocky or technical parts of the trail, I would slow down and I would walk, and I never fell. So yeah, I'm the one that cares the most about the safety of my baby. So those other people's opinions really haven't gotten to me.
You can directly compare. I know all children are different, so therefore different things happen between first and second. But were you able to following the birth of both children, did you notice a difference in your recovery from the birth between the two children, given you ran longer with the second child?
Yeah, I think I have noticed a difference. After my daughter was born, I started running up at 6 weeks postpartum. And then immediately I hurt. My knees hurt, my back hurt, my pelvis hurt. And with my son, I started running again at just about 4 weeks postpartum. And this time my body feels good. And I think through this pregnancy, I was able to stay stronger by running. And I also worked in some strength exercises to keep my glutes and my hips and my pelvic floor strong. So I think that helps greatly with recovery.
Our greatest ever female runner, Paula Radcliffe, used to say that she felt that she became stronger following the birth of her child. And actually, I think she ran her world record times after her birth. What do you think about that? Do you think it's changed your body in any way that's improved your running?
Yeah, well, she is incredible, and I'm not nearly on her level, but I do think I agree with that. I'm still really early postpartum, so we'll see what my future running holds, but I do feel stronger, and I've definitely lost endurance, and I've lost a little bit of speed that I had before, but mentally, I know I'm stronger. As you know, and as your wife knows, pregnancy and childbirth and motherhood are all very hard, so after doing those things, I definitely have more confidence that I can take on more big challenges.
What does running give to you, and why do you think you've sort of gone for it? Why do you think you've gone for ultra running particularly?
Yeah, well, running is my me time, and being a stay-at-home mom, I spend my days taking care of other people, and running is kind of how I take care of myself, and it makes me really happy. It helps me put things in perspective. If I am at home and feeling anxious or worried about something, I get out on a run and I'm able to clear my mind and think about things more clearly. And I'm able to return happier and with more patience. So I think it makes me a better person and a better mom overall.
Yeah. And do you, I'm certainly thinking about this now, because I retired from running before the birth of my child, because it was, I've been a runner for since my teenage, and I thought that, you know, it's enough now. I've been training twice a day for 10 years. But do you think it's important for you to run as a model for your children? Is that come into your mind?
Yes, definitely. Especially being a woman and a mother, I want them to know that a woman's passions and hobbies don't have to end with motherhood. I want them to find what makes them happy, and I want them to be able to take care of themselves and love themselves in order to take care of others and love others well. And I really hope that they can be able to set challenging goals for themselves and to work hard to reach them. And I want them to know that they don't have to be the very best in what they do. They just have to try hard and do their best.
Yeah. And there's nothing, excuse me, I was thinking about this today, like there's various things, like, you know, religion teaches you various lessons that are good, a good way of kind of bringing up your child. And I think endurance sports almost, it's not a religion, it's a different thing, but it does, the lessons you learn from doing endurance sports are good life lessons, the dedication, determination, you know, what you get out of it is what you put in. So these things aren't just, you know, lessons for sport, they're lessons for the whole of their life. So it's quite important to encourage
them. Right. Yeah, and I think the community aspect is really important too. Running brings people together. I think a lot of people think they think it's a selfish sport, but actually it takes a community, and it takes a family teaming up together to figure out how they're going to make running work for whichever family member is going to be running.
Yeah, absolutely. And you part of the is it the Adventure Mamas initiative?
Yeah.
Can you give us some background on that?
Yeah, it's a great nonprofit organization, and they focus on maternal health and wellness through outdoor adventure. So they provide educational resources and workshops and just a sense of community for moms who enjoy getting outside and practicing whatever sport or activity it is. So there's trail runners, climbers, skiers, and they're just very supportive of moms continuing their hobbies after becoming mothers.
Okay. And how did you become involved? What's your role there with the mamas?
So I was an ambassador last year for them. So I kind of helped promote the organization by word of mouth and through social media. And they have their ambassadors each take on a project that they create. So mine was writing. So I wrote a series of blog posts for their website about my experiences trail running through pregnancy. So you can find those blog posts on adventuremamas.org.
Okay, I'll pop a link so people can get on. Yeah. And how did the Runner's World come about? How did they come to hear about your story, and what was the reasons behind that? And what advice would you give to mothers who are, or runners who are kind of potentially going through pregnancy, and do you have any advice you'd give to them to either, well, mainly to give them the confidence to carry on doing it? What would be your piece of advice to them?
Yeah, I would say most importantly, try to give yourself and your changing body grace. Hmm. It's really difficult, especially in the beginning, to see how much your running changes so suddenly, especially before you even have a baby bump to show for it.
Hmm.
But it feels really hard. And then it kind of only gets harder as you become more pregnant. It gets more harder physically because baby is heavier and you become more uncomfortable. But if you are like me and you feel overall well enough to continue, I would say go for it. If running makes you happy, then continue doing what makes you happy and know that running is safe for baby. It's healthy for you. Don't listen to what the naysayers are telling you because it's good for you.
Yeah, exactly. Perfect. And so this is slightly different to pregnancy, but do you feel in where you are now in Arizona, I think there's potentially in the UK like an attitude where you're overprotective of your children and you don't kind of let them go out and explore their environment and maybe make mistakes. What is the attitude like in, well, maybe America's too big, but where you are in Arizona, are people quite like let their children out on the trails, and or is there quite an attitude where if you're doing that, you're a bad parent and you shouldn't do, you know, let your children go out and discover the outdoor world?
I think in the community that my husband and I are drawn to, people are more interested in getting outdoors and hiking, camping, and they tend to give their children more freedom. And here in our town, it's pretty rural, so there's not much going on city-wise, but there's a lot to do outdoors and in the mountains. So I think, I do think parents here give their children a bit more freedom to explore and to play and to learn on their own and to get dirty.
Yeah. It's important though, right? Because like when I was a kid, I went and I fell out of trees and I did that sort of thing. And then you learn your boundaries and you understand how far you can push yourself. I think it's an important lesson to learn really as a child.
Yeah, I definitely agree.
Yeah. And I've got three quick fire questions just to finish off with. And the first one is, if you could be anywhere running now, where would it be?
So I think I would be in Idaho. If it were summertime,
okay.
It's cold winter now, but if it were summertime, I'd be in Idaho, anywhere in the Boise National Forest. My mom is from Idaho and her family has a cabin there. And if I were running there, I would probably be with my husband and I'd be running with my brothers and my dad and my sister-in-law. And we'd probably soak our legs in a cold creek or river afterwards and then drink a beer together. So it would be a family run.
Nice, fantastic. And second question is, can you recommend our listeners something? So it could be an open-ended question. Anything you'd like to recommend, please do.
Yeah, so for the pregnant runners, the belly band that I mentioned, or any belly band to support your back and your lower bump, that is very helpful during pregnancy. So I use the Gabriella band. And I ordered it online. And then another thing would be a documentary, an HBO documentary about the tennis player Serena Williams, called Being Serena.
Mm.
And it's about her pregnancy and her return to tennis postpartum. And I think it would be eye-opening to some people who may not realize how challenging postpartum recovery is, and it kind of shows the journey she went through and how hard she's had to work to get back to where she was. And I'm sure she's still working to get to that point right now.
Yeah, fantastic. And our final question is what is the greatest endurance performance ever in your opinion?
So it's not a single feat, but it's a person. American ultra runner Courtney DeWalter is incredible. in 2017, she won the race Moab 240. So 240 miles she ran for over 2 days. She beat the next guy by 10 hours. And then last year, she got second place at Big's Backyard Ultra. I don't know if you've heard of this race.
No.
But runners had an hour to run a four-mile loop and then show up at the starting line to complete their next loop. And the last person standing was the winner. And she came in second place, but she ran nearly 280 miles.
No. Wow.
Incredible.
Yeah. Wow. So, yeah, that's pretty amazing. What's her name again, Courtney?
Courtney DeWalter.
DeWalter. Okay. Yeah. Fantastic. Yeah.
DAUWALTER.
Wow. I'll have to have a look into her. Yeah, have a look at her feet. Yeah. It's pretty amazing. Well, great stuff. Thanks a lot for your time. It's been great chatting, and good luck with your 50 miler coming up. Hopefully you'll enjoy that, and the kids will be inspired by your running and continue to do the same, which would be great.
Hope so. Thank you, Sean.
So on this week's show, we're talking to Alex Collins. How are you doing, Alex?
Yeah, good, thank you. Thanks for having me on.
No trouble. And I'm going to give you I'm going to big you up at the start. You're a 241 marathon runner, a ski mountaineer. You're an investment manager in the city. But also you're a diabetes type 1 sufferer. I guess suffering is the word, isn't it, I think?
Well, it doesn't feel like suffering.
It's no.
Yeah.
And so for our listeners, what is diabetes type 1?
So, well, it's type 1 diabetes. It's a condition where the body's immune system has killed all of the cells in my pancreas that create insulin. And for those who don't know, insulin is the hormone that your body releases whenever you eat anything with sugar in. So that would be like sugar, or it would be like complex carbohydrates, like, you know, like wholemeal pasta or like carrots or onions, anything that's got any sugar wrapped up inside it whatsoever, that sugar will eventually get released into your bloodstream. And then you need to absorb that sugar into your muscles and into your liver and to get it out of your blood. And that's what insulin does. Okay. So my body doesn't produce insulin. So it means that if I was to eat a Snickers, my blood sugar would just rocket and it wouldn't come down.
Right. So, okay. And how did you find out you had diabetes?
Well, when type 1 diabetes comes on very quickly, your insulin producing cells get killed off over a period of time, and then one day they just get overwhelmed. So my normal diet was just, I wasn't able to absorb the sugar from my normal diet. So I lost weight, because you can imagine, like, all the carbohydrates I was eating just weren't going into my body. So I lost weight. I felt very lethargic, and I think probably because I couldn't burn carbs for energy because I didn't have any. So I'd be running, you know, I was running regularly, and I realized that I was running slower and slower. And you know, you need to drink a lot, and there's a few other symptoms, but really it was a weight loss. It was one day I was brushing my teeth in front of the mirror, and it was this had gone over 5 weeks. So I went from 74 kilograms to 67 kilograms in 5 weeks, which is like massive weight loss. And I was brushing my teeth and looking at myself in the mirror thinking, I'm just a bag of skin and bone. And I didn't know what was wrong with me. I thought, like, do I have worms? Do I have cancer?
Yeah.
So I remember, like, running to work that morning thinking, I'm going to weigh myself when I get to work. We had a gym at work. And so I weighed myself and I was like, oh dear, yeah, there's definitely something wrong. So I went to the doctor and, you know, straight away got diagnosed with diabetes.
And how old were you then?
33, I think, or 32 or 33. Can't quite remember.
Yeah. And how many years ago was that?
So I'm 38 now. So it was 5.5 years exactly that I was diagnosed.
Yeah. And so what did he say to you? What did the doctor, how did he deliver that news, that bombshell?
Well, it kind of went in two processes, in two stages. So I saw the, like, the we had a GP at work. So I saw the GP, and I'd seen him a few times before about, like, running injuries. And he basically said to me, You know, pull yourself together, do these stretches. I'm not going to refer you to a physio, you know, get out of my office. So he's quite like no nonsense doctor. But this time he said, yeah, you need to go make an appointment to go to hospital. I think you've got diabetes. So at that point, I didn't know what diabetes was. Like, I thought I had type 2 diabetes, which is the one you get in middle age, which is like lifestyle related. Because I didn't even know you could get type 1 diabetes as an adult.
No.
So I kind of had like 24 hours to get used to the idea. And then I went to a proper hospital the next day and saw a doctor who's since become a friend. He also runs and does ski mountaineering. And he, you know, did the proper tests and confirmed that I did have type 1 diabetes. And, you know, that, I mean, I was sort of shocked. Yeah. I didn't know what it was.
Yeah.
And I said to him, can I still exercise? And he, you know, I think he didn't want to raise my hopes too much. So he said, well, it's going to be much more difficult.
Yeah.
I'll explain that in a minute. But he said it'd be much more difficult. So this was in August. And, you know, I had a lot of like ski mountaineering plans for the winter. And obviously when you're ski mountaineering, you're in the, you know, you're in the high mountains, you're away from civilization. So you don't want to have any health, like medical emergencies. So I had sort of 6 months to learn how to manage my diabetes. So I was quite motivated to try and get on top of the condition.
Yeah. And was he supportive then? Did the doctor feel like you could do it? Did he give you much advice on how you could possibly manage it and be able to continue doing this thing?
Well, I saw I saw him a lot in that first week of, you know, as you may expect. And, the first three times I saw him, I said to him, I really need to get exercising. I need to work out how to do it. And by the, you know, by the third time he looked at me and said, you know, I can see you're just going to do this anyway, aren't you? So I may as well try and help.
I should probably
say what is the challenge with type 1 diabetes? So with type 1 diabetes, you have to inject insulin into your body. And if you inject too much insulin, what that means is that you absorb like too much sugar from your blood. And if you absorb all the sugar from your blood, that's an extreme scenario. If you absorb all the sugar from your blood, you literally die because your brain needs some sugar to work.
Yeah.
So, and that's the challenge that a lot of people with type 1 diabetes have, is that they're very nervous about exercising and getting low blood sugar as a result of exercising.
Right.
Because when you exercise, you get more sensitive to insulin, you absorb more sugar from your blood than you would do otherwise. So it's a little bit complicated. Like if you've given yourself, you know, a bit too much insulin and then you exercise, you can get into real trouble.
Yeah.
So that's where there's a challenge.
Yeah.
And that's a challenge for people with type 1 diabetes in their normal life. They don't want their blood sugar to be too high.
Yeah.
Because then you get long-term health problems, like, you know, you go blind or you lose your feet or you have kidney problems. So you don't want your blood sugar to be too high. But if you let your blood sugar drop too much, then, you know, then you might die.
Yeah.
So like straight away. So it's kind of like you're trying to like trade off like a long, slow death with a quick death, trying to like get it, like, you know, get the balance, you know.
Find the sweet spot that doesn't involve dying.
Yeah, basically. Well, we're all going to die, aren't we?
But, yeah, I guess so. Yeah. So, like, how did you then? What did you start doing? How did you kind of start on this journey to managing the condition? What was your first steps to doing that?
So I wanted to understand how my blood sugar was affected by running. So that's what I wanted to do. Well, or how it was affected by exercise. And I thought running was a good thing to do. To like collect some data. So, I mean, the first thing I did was I signed up for the London Marathon. So I did that like a week after I was diagnosed. So that's in April. So I was diagnosed in August. So I had 8 months until the marathon.
Yeah.
And at the time, I didn't even know whether I could run a marathon with type 1 diabetes. Yeah. Of course, lots of people do, but I didn't know that. So I signed up for a type 1 diabetes charity, JDRF, who I've supported over the years. And then I started running. So I think like two weeks after my diagnosis, I'd worked up to doing a half marathon. Wow. And I just did it by myself. And every 15 minutes, I would stop and test my blood and like make a note of what my blood sugar was.
Mm.
Because, you know, I wanted to make sure that I knew, like, if I had to eat jelly babies to keep my blood sugar from dropping too low, like how my blood sugar was affected by running. And I remember that, like, that half marathon, I was by the seaside in Norfolk, and I remember stopping to test my blood sugar, and you know, some bloke with a running group ran past me and made some kind of snide comment about like me being a bit lazy, having a rest or something, and I wanted to shout at him, I've just been diagnosed with diabetes.
You idiot.
But, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I carried on doing that, and you know, blood sugar reacts differently depending on whether you run fast, whether you run slow, whether you run for a long time, whether you're running for a short time. And then it can, you know, blood sugar can then be different after you've gone for a run as well.
Yeah.
Your sensitivity to insulin is different. So there's different kind of, you have to learn like how your body, you know, how your body works basically.
Yeah.
And I did that by, you know, running and kind of collecting data. And because I wanted to collect more data, you know, fairly quickly, within about 2 months, I was like going for 3-hour runs. I wanted 3 hours of data of my blood sugar. And so at that point I thought, well, you know, I've always sort of wanted to do an ultra marathon. I'll just sign up for an ultra. So I entered an ultra marathon in the Brecon Beacons in December of that year, which is 45 miles, you know, 2,500 meters ascent. And so that was like my goal to run that. Yeah.
And how did it go? Did you manage it?
Yeah, it went really well.
Yeah.
So that was 4 months after my diagnosis, almost to the day. So I just had my head down, and I was, you know, I was just running. I was just running slowly because I didn't, you know, 45 miles is a long way. I thought, I'm not going to try and run it fast. I'm just going to run slow miles, try and get like lots of distance, try and understand like what my nutrition should be and how my blood sugar is going to go. And I had an injury. I had an Achilles, like, I think I had tendinopathy. So I saw a physio who was also a running coach. He was really, really good. He gave me some like strength exercises. And so I did those. And then I turned up at the ultra and absolutely smashed it. Like started off nice and slow, and then, you know, was overtaking people throughout the whole race. Yeah. And in the end was in third place. Finishing on the podium for my first ultra would have been amazing, but I got lost. So added an extra 10 minutes to my run. And so I came fourth in the end, but,
wow.
But it was, it's that's the last few miles of that race running along is I felt really, really proud of myself.
Mm.
Like feeling pride is not something that I don't think happens to us very often. Mm. And I'd had diabetes. I, you know, worked out how to manage my diabetes. I ran my first ultra marathon, and I was really emotional. I was crying. I was basically sobbing for 3 or 4 miles of the race, and I was so happy. And I'm not sure I'm ever going to be able to recreate that again, because, you know, I've done longer races since, but and more challenging races. But it was that sort of, you know, I didn't know I could do it, and I did it. And wow. It's just such an incredible feeling.
Yeah. And so you went on, obviously, to run London. And how many marathons have you run since that, since the diagnosis?
So that London Marathon, I ran that in fancy dress, actually. So I wanted to run in a onesie, like for type 1 diabetes. So I wrote to Guinness World Records and said, you know, is there a world record for onesie? And they said there's not, but you could dress as an animal. So I got a tiger costume, which is full body tiger costume.
Yeah.
It's like quite light, but like went over my face and the record for that was 2:51, I think.
Hmm.
The existing record for the animal.
Yeah.
And, uh, So that was my goal, to try and get the Guinness World Record and to raise loads of money for the charity.
Yeah.
So I ended up running it in 2:48, just as a tiger.
Wow. Do you still hold the record then?
I think I do, yeah. Wow. Yeah, I think I do.
Carry on.
Go on.
There you go.
Yeah, it's right. No.
And how do you do it? How does it work in practice then? So in like a marathon like that, and obviously you've gone on to run quickly, you ran 2:41. Was that in Birmingham you ran that race?
Yeah, that was Birmingham, yeah.
How does it work? So most of us will be chucking back goos, and we spend a lot of time thinking about when we're going to take our gels or our drinks and that sort of thing. But for you, yeah, it's a whole different ball game. How does it work? How did you feel for these marathons?
So it's actually changed. Like, how my body reacts has changed over time. So that first ultramarathon I did, I was eating 60 grams of carbohydrate an hour. Mm. So, like, for my weight, the most you're meant to be able to eat is 70 grams of carbs an hour. That's all your body can deal with. So, like, if I was doing a, you know, Ironman, I'd be recommended to eat 70 grams of carbs. Anyway, I was eating 60 grams of carbs for the ultra. Mm. And all these other ultramarathoners were thinking that I was crazy eating that much. Anyway, nowadays, I only need to eat, like, for the Birmingham Marathon, I think I had 2 jelly babies, which is like 10 grams of carbs. Wow.
And that was it, the whole run?
That was it, yeah.
Wow.
And goos I don't eat because there's too much sugar in one, or rather gels I don't eat because there's too much sugar in one gel. So it's like a bit too much of a hit.
Yeah.
I train, all my training is done fasted, because it's easier to manage my diabetes if I haven't eaten, because it means I haven't given myself extra insulin before I run.
Okay.
So, and I think over time, I don't know if the fasting running makes a difference, but obviously, you know, as I'm sure you and your listeners know, when you do a lot of slow miles running, your aerobic system gets better at using fat as as energy.
Mm.
So I don't think I burn much sugar when I run, certainly when I'm running slowly.
Yeah.
And then if you do a marathon, that's quite fast. So the liver, you know, the liver stores a lot of sugar, and the liver releases sugar into the bloodstream when you start running. So my blood sugar actually goes up for the first like hour of the marathon. And then, you know, it falls gradually after that.
Yeah.
But I've never, you know, I've never had a problem with feeling like I've got low blood sugar running these races. Yeah.
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 So that means in training, so most of your training is done at a slightly slower pace. You don't do as much kind of marathon pace effort. Something.
Yeah. Well, I think I probably do what runners should do. So most runners should run slowly most of the time.
Hmm.
And then, like, at the moment, I don't have I've got a goal race in, like, my kind of like a race is in the autumn. So it's a long time away. So I'm doing strength training and I'm doing slow miles and I'm doing like one or two like faster runs a week, depending on like how I feel. But the faster running is not, you know, I'm not even really aiming to do any.
Okay.
And then like going into a marathon, I'll be doing 3 fast sessions. So like an intervals on the track, like a fartlek or something, and then like a long run with some fast miles in that long run.
Wow. And you've become more intuitive. Obviously, you're not having to stop every 15 minutes now. You're able to manage your body intuitively.
Yeah, well, I still test my blood sugar occasionally, but whereas I used to, in the early days of having diabetes, I would literally have to eat, you know, 12 jelly babies an hour, like 60 grams of carbs an hour while I was running.
Yeah.
And now, if I run 2 hours, it's very unlikely I need to eat anything. And even if I run for 3 hours, I probably have about 4 jelly babies for a 3-hour run.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I really don't think you need to eat very much when you're running.
And you have become faster with diabetes than before. Is that right? You've actually managed to improve your personal best.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah, much faster.
Yeah. So, like, for most people, I mean, there must have been times when you thought, oh, do you know what? I can't be bothered. Or have you always been, you know, how's your reaction been to it? To the news that you had this? Have you ever had any dark moments in terms of thinking you couldn't carry on doing the exercise?
I mean, I've always been highly motivated by like exercise, and you know, I love like moving my body. I love like being in the mountains and being independent in the mountains. And so when I was diagnosed, I was highly motivated to figure out how I could continue to exercise.
Yeah.
So if you think for like the average person that gets diagnosed with type 1 diabetes, they're just like the average person. Mm. And the average person doesn't like running as much as I do. So a lot of people with type 1 diabetes find it hard to exercise. And probably the really one of the main reasons is that they might not be motivated to learn how to exercise properly.
Yeah.
And I would say that everybody with type 1 diabetes is different. So everybody's body is different. You're a sample size of one, and you know what I can do might not be the same as what someone else can do, and other people might be able to do things that I can't do.
Yeah.
So I can only talk about myself, but I think that if you're motivated enough and something's possible, you can do it.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, like, it doesn't matter how motivated I am, I'm not going to be able to fly.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to be able to drink a can of Coca-Cola.
Yeah.
Because I've got type 1 diabetes. So those things are impossible for me to do.
Yeah.
But you know, going for a run, that's possible.
Yeah.
You know, having a normal job, having a family, that's all completely fine.
Yeah.
Like, anyone with type 1 diabetes can do those things.
Yeah. It's about being positive about yourself, learning your body and learning to adapt to your circumstance, I guess.
Yeah. 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 Exactly. Yeah.
Well, I've got three final questions. I don't want to keep you too long. We've got three final questions to ask, which are quick fire questions. And they are, if you could be anywhere running now, where would it be?
So running.
Go for running.
Yeah, it would have to be in the mountains somewhere.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say Snowdonia or the Lake District, running, you know, a long way, not seeing any other people, and you know, all under my own steam.
Perfect. And what about, second question is, recommend the listeners something, so it can be physical, like a book or film, or an experience.
Can I do two?
Yep.
Okay, so physical is I've got really into podcasts when I run.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to recommend this podcast because everyone knows about this one. So the other one is a podcast called The Knowledge Project by Farnham Street, and it's got all different kinds of people talking about what they do. It's absolutely fascinating. So I listen to that on my slow miles.
Yeah.
I listen to that podcast, or, you know, that's one of the podcasts I listen to.
Fantastic.
And then the other thing I'd recommend is, if you can, if you ever get the opportunity, try and go ski mountaineering. It's like running on skis, and it's absolutely brilliant. In the winter, it is the best thing to do.
Yeah, fantastic. And actually, I was going to say, I saw a great video of you on a hard bar?
Hard bar, yeah.
Yeah, there's an amazing video of you up on. Whereabouts is that mountain?
That's in Chamonix.
Oh, it's amazing. Some drone footage of you.
So for your listeners, what I like doing is, I've got these very, very light skis and very, very light boots. They're like 1 kilo on each foot. With skis and boots, and so I can go for a run out my door. I wear trainers that are like waterproof trainers, run up into the snow, and then I change into my skis and boots and ski tour up the mountain, and then I ski down somewhere else, and then until the snow line finishes, and then I put my trainers back on and run home. And
nice.
it's just brilliant. Like, the, you know, just being there by yourself in the mountains under your own steam, just moving. It's amazing.
Fantastic. Well, it looked pretty fantastic to me, but hey. And our final question is, what is, in your opinion, the greatest endurance performance or feat of all time?
Well, that's a difficult question. I'm going to just have to say, what Kilian Jornet has achieved, I think, is absolutely amazing. It could be climbing Everest twice in a week without oxygen, although that's so far out of my experience that I've got no idea how impressive that is, really.
Yeah.
But I think he said on your show that it's not a particular event. It's the fact that he can, you know, win a vertical kilometer world championship and an ultra marathon world championship in the same year. I just think it's absolutely astounding, like the the volume of training he does and the amount of racing he does and like how good he is over so many different distances.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go with Kilian Jornet.
I'd love to see him do a road marathon. I just want to see what he can do because you just don't know, but it'd be fantastic to see him give it a try.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I agree. And he claims he's never, ever going to do one because he doesn't like running on a road, which is a shame because, I mean, it would be amazing. It would be really interesting to see how fast he would be.
Let's try and push him. Excellent. Well, thanks for talking, Alex, and good luck with your... You've got a race coming up in the autumn?
In the autumn, yeah. I'm going to do the Amsterdam Marathon, I think.
Hey.
Subject to my brother getting married around that time.
Okay.
So your hometown.
Yeah, fantastic. I'll be out on the course. We'll have to have a pasta party or something like that.
Yeah, brilliant.
Good stuff. Lovely. Well, thanks for talking to us and good luck with your training for that. So nice inspirational stories from both Bridget and from Alex there. I hope everyone takes that and gets out and gets it done this next month. Looking at our Let's Get Running Strava group, people are getting it done, Jermaine. We've got nearly 200 people on there. They are cracking it out. The leaderboard from last week, Andreas, I know Andreas, he's a vegan runner. He did 200 kilometres last week. Big up, Andreas. Amazing. He was our leader last week. Donald did a nice 160 kilometres last week. And Kieran in second place, 161. So people are putting up big numbers. Chris G, look at his climbing. I think that's Chris Greenwood. 2,449 kilometres of metres of climbing. So yeah, there's lots of people there doing great stuff.
There ain't that much hills around Ladywell.
Maybe it's not Chris Greenwood. I'll have to look into that. But yeah, loads of people doing good stuff. It's nice to see everyone out there running and joining our Strava group. And there's loads of nice people on there. Excellent. Well, we'll let you get on. Carry on.
Did we get any reviews?
Jermaine, we've only had a couple of days since the last one.
You're killing me! Someone please go now.
We need more reviews, people. It helps.
We only get one a week, and they probably review like the day before.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. We'll get more. So we do love reviews. Again, if you haven't put one on there, we'll read them out. We love getting them. So make me and Jermaine happy. Thanks very much. Yeah, enjoy the next week, Jermaine. I'll enjoy my holiday. And
cool.
Good luck with your 10K, and we'll catch up in a week's time. Nice one.
Yeah, look for me on the leaderboard. Near the bottom.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Look for the leaderboard.
I'm keeping an eye on everyone in front of me.
200 kilometres. You've got to match that next week. Good luck. Good luck, brother. Good luck. Nice one. Cheers, man.
See ya. Bye. Bye.